We hear a lot about the old woman who lived in a shoe with all her children, but we never hear anything about the poor father. Sole custody. How could I know she would finally sue? Now I am the one doesn't know what to do. She got the one sock and all of the kids, leaving me what? A life on the skids. We don't have an attic. The bed is a pain. The uppers are cracked and let in the rain. The shoe's overcrowded, she said in her suit. The judge sent me packing to buy her a boot. But lately the children have all moved away. She's footloose, but I've still the mortgage to pay. She's seeing a night owl, no rumour, just facts, and spending her time in his Nike Air Max. Each day when I pick up the nursery chimes, I read of her exploits and all her good times, while I'm down at heel with my toes turning blue, laments the old man who once lived in a shoe. Gran, as we noted earlier, kept a lot of pets, among whom, unfortunately, there was a rogue. Granny sighed. Among our granny's flowering pots were leopards, lions and ocelots, a cassowary, an alligator, an elephant that upped and ate her. The cops that came investigating missed the elephants masticating. Accordingly, their suspicions fell on Miss Lavinia Prue LaBelle, a sweet, endearing, winsome wench. They hauled her up before the bench. "Not guilty, miss," inquired the judge. "That's what I said, and I shan't budge." "Then off with her, the lying strumpet." The elephant began to trumpet, but from the body of the court, responding to her brave retort, up spoke the grieving alligator, "The elephant's the perpetrator." The judge said, "Half a mo' while I check out this Jumbo's alibi. Now, where were you while Gran was at?" The elephant mumbled, I forget. They sent him down for Gran's side. Clearly, the elephant had lied. "I've worked it all out. If I only can get the government to listen to me now, we can sort out all the economic ills of the nation. Anti-gravity. Feline aerodynamics dictate the behaviour of cats when falling. No matter the height, it's always their fate to land on their feet, caterwauling. The laws of butter bread demand it must always hit the ground, butter side first. The ways both land give rise to a thing I have found. A simple slice of buttered toast strapped to the back of a cavity, butter side up, allows me to boast I've discovered anti-gravity. The twisting of the buttered bread cancels the spin of the cat, and rather than falling, you'll find instead they hover in front of your flat. The buttered cat, I have done the sum, released will reach the height where forces in equilibrium cancel each other outright. The twisting of cats and butter repulsion can be finely tuned so that to rise, remove some butter emulsion, to fall, shave fur from the cat. 10 million cats with buttered backs, a moderate overdonation, would give us all, no need for tax, economical transportation. Really, things are getting so bad now that one of these days we're going to ring home and get a reply telling us, press 1 if you want to speak to Dad, 2 if you want to speak to Mom, and so on. Calling the bank from a phone booth.
Your Honour, I rang my bank. It was really no big deal, and got a voice that said thank you and launched into a spiel. And the Nutcracker Suite.
Press 1 for an interest rate, 2 if you want to meet with a mortgage associate, 3 to close an account, 4 to arrange a loan, 5 to know the amount on deposit and wait for a tone.
I pressed when the tone abated, still the Nutcracker Suite, then heard, once I'd patiently waited,
in order that we may complete your business, kindly press
the Nutcracker Suite.
1 to give your address, 2 if you wish a receipt, 3 if you wish to send.
I jabbed at number 1 before the voice could end, my equanimity gone. I clattered the phone with a shoe
when press 1
came again with a list of options anew, this time up to 10. As the Nutcracker soared to a peak, I pranced about on the tops of my toes and began to shriek. Somebody called the cops. I had one call at the station. I rang my lawyer and heard,
press 1 if you're on probation, 2 if bail is deferred.
I screamed I'd murder the bastard as they locked me into a cell, and thinking my rage could be mastered, allowed a new phone call as well. I felt it deep in my waters, in a flash of remarkable clarity. I'd resort to faith of our fathers and ring up Father McGarity.
Press 1 if he gets into fights, 2 if you're wished to atone, 3 if you need the last rites.
At 4 I made bits of the phone. They held me a week without bail. I ranted, but no one could hear me, for the warders and cutthroats in jail feared for their lives to come near me. Your Honour, I'm here on a writ. I'm sorry for all I have done, and pray from my heart you'll acquit this technology-challenged old nun.
What fun we all would have had had we not been kicked out of the Garden of Eden. The first laugh. A fly, in a flash of inspiration, spun a web. An exemplary act which thought every animal in creation that they had gifts they'd hitherto lacked. So mice made honey, and fish climbed hills, and kangaroos nested in sycamore trees. Oh, every evening the whippoorwills swam with cats in the depths of the seas. Lions gambolled about in flocks. The dawn chorale rose from singing baboons. Chickens danced with a whistling fox to the music of meerkats playing the spoons. In Eden, all creatures acquired a new craft, and one, for the first time ever, laughed. That's the trouble with auctions. Even when you win, do you really win? The auction. It's mostly junk in the auction hall, save lot 15 displayed on the wall. An antique fly rod, matching reel, it is, at any price, a steal. He takes it down and dares not speak, a split cane hardy, how unique. He feels the balance, its spring and heft, and swishing, cast it right and left. The auction starts, dismayed that plenty of bidders rank. As cognoscenti, he bids far higher than he ought, and wins, but with this nagging thought, expensive rods that anglers swish, catch far more fishermen than fish. Who can ever forget playing that great escapist game of our childhood, cowboys and Indians? Could we ever have one last game of it? Indian Wars. The Cree, the Sioux, the Cheyenne too, came over Daly's Hill and fell into an ambush that killed them all, until they heard a voice commanding, "Come home immediately." Reluctantly, we all rose up and went in for our tea. We fixed a battered wooden crate and scoured the ocean floor. We scaled the heights of Everest and we fought like Archie Moore. We aye-aye'd Tarzan-like when Molly Clear went by, each one compelled to do so, though none as yet knew why. With the blackest of dark secrets and the direst deadly oath, we sanctified our brotherhood of pirates and cutthroats. But Mickey Fitz got in a scrape and somehow grazed his knee. His mother fair lit into us for wanton thuggery. Daly's Hill is long since razed. The wigwams have moved on. Molly lies in Liverpool, and Fitz died in Saigon. One by one we're ambushed now, and each one fearfully awaits the call commanding him, "Come home immediately." To be a fly fisherman is to have a vocation almost as compelling as that of the priesthood. The old priest, Canon Corrigan. The old priest, Canon Corrigan, was 80 years alive. He'd been a priest for 60 years, a fisherman 65. We found him lying on the bank, along the Jockey's Weir, dead as the gleaming fish that lay beside his fishing gear. Many a time we'd seen him make a double-handed cast, and raise a fish and strike his fish, and how he held it fast. But nobody was with him, and the day was almost done, when he struck the fish that stripped his line and balked him in his run. We saw the track along the bank, where hunter followed prey, and sensed we saw the straining rod, how skilfully he'd play a fish. The grass was beaten down and trampled, we could see. The fish had played the fisherman, and neither would break free. Perhaps they'd struggled through the night, and neither would give in, until old wisdom told the fisherman must win. That salmon weighing 30 pounds, the likes of which are few, or end beside a spent old priest, laid out in morning dew. In Ireland, the merrow are water demons. The males are ugly and warlike. The females are beautiful and charming. The merrow. From out that devil's bit a spring, the river, deep and darkening, wears limestone walls down the vale of Knockanair. Then its tossing turns tear through Norland falls, whence it flows, sans foil or let, until beneath Mount Juliet it slows and stalls. There nightly from a brooding pool, wherein the pig-eyed merrow rule, a merrow calls. The men who hear the cry she makes, unfortunates whom God forsakes, the merrow takes. Old customs and old gods die hard. The Raggedy Bush. The Raggedy Bush stands lonely in Powell Gower, arrayed in rags of motley age and hue. A shrine to antique faith, druidic power, whose rites are here performed each day anew. Tattered shreds on branch and twig and twine, each scrap a prayer and knotted reverence to deities both vengeful and benign. What do folk seek? Divine benevolence? The raggedy bush roots deep into the souls of all who come in supplication here, and flourishes on its exacted tolls of avarice, credulity, and fear. Ringed by the church and chapel, much alive, the bush thrives, and our pagan gods survive.